All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fuck sticks? What the fuckettes? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. How's everybody? Rob Hubel is on the show today. Rob has a series that he created and stars in, Do You Want to See a Dead Body? It's on YouTube Red. I never had Rob on. But it turned out to be hilarious and had a great conversation. I got a real kick out of him. We kind of had a good time, me and the Hubel. So I'm a little, you know, bonkers, you know, moving, man. It's just like it never, and I have not touched the garage. The garage is like this preserved museum of me that is now just sitting out here by itself. The house is getting emptier. I moved the fucking cats, which is no small deal. It's very odd how cat-like I am. And I know I talked about this, but I can't. It's very weird coming back to this house with no cats in it. I realize that I've been worried about this house for, you know, almost two decades because of those cats. What's going on with the cats? One of the reasons I could never leave the house was the cats. What about the outdoor cats? What about Boomer? Like when I went bankrupt and I was going through that divorce, I didn't know how, if I had lost the house, how would I go anywhere? Boomer was outside. I couldn't move Boomer. Well, that's over. But now this house has never had no cats in it. And it's weird because I can just leave the door open now. And every time I walk by it, I'm like, oh shit. But nope, there's no cats in it. It's so weird. And there's almost no me in it. It's so fucking bizarre. And it just seems like moving is never ending. This is a small house. But obviously I'm going to stay here in the garage for a bit. My house is not in that bad a shape. I just have to fix it up. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I think I might just maybe keep it as a cabin. Maybe keep it as a workspace. Maybe just have the garage here and use it as the office. I don't know. I know that I have to use it for an extended period of time. I don't know. The most difficult thing I got to move is this garage, and it has remained untouched. Anyways, what I did want to reach out about here is that somebody that we know and like a lot is dealing with something really tough right now. We want to lend a hand here. Barry Crimmins is a great comic and someone we've enjoyed having on this show. I did an episode with him back in like 2013, and then he was back on with Bobcat Goldthwait in 2015. And if you saw the documentary that Bob made about him, Call Me Lucky, you know Barry's story, that he's been a tireless advocate on behalf of victims of sexual abuse. Now, we found out that Barry's wife, Helen, who's an artist in her own right, a great photographer, is in the middle of a cancer fight, and the cost of treatment has become overwhelming. The copays alone are just staggering for the two of them, and it's just it's tragic. It's really heavy what they're both going through, and with all the help that Barry has given to people in his life as an advocate and human rights activist, we figured we can help lift Barry and Helen up right now. If we can lift them up just a bit, that would be tremendous. If you go to Barry's Twitter page, you'll see the pinned tweet has a link to Helen's GoFundMe account. That's at Crimmins, C-R-I-M-M-I-N-S, on Twitter. Someday we can hope to live in a country where they actually fix healthcare so that no one can ever be driven into financial peril because they got sick. But until that time, we're going to have to help each other. So let's help Barry and Helen out. Okay. Go to at Crimmins on Twitter and look at that pinned tweet for that link to the GoFundMe so we can help, save Helen's life. So Godspeed, Barry and Helen. Sorry you're going through that. And I hope we can help out a little bit. So that's horrible, but there is hope there. There is hope there. We've been in touch with Barry a bit. So I am in the middle of this move and projecting a lot onto my cats and onto my own situation and wondering, you know, whether I can handle it, whether I deserve it, whether, you know, I should have just burrowed in here. But it's a trip to move those cats, man. You know, Monkey and LaFonda and me have been together for a long time, since 2004, 13 years. Gone back and forth with Monkey to New York, and LaFonda has made that trip once. But this is the really the only home outside of their childhood home in Astoria, Queens, where I found them in the alley that they've ever known. And it was weird for me. Like, I think I was just, it was getting sort of sad just the cats here, yeah, as I took things out. And there was part of me that thought, well, maybe I could, maybe they just stay at the house when I'll just have them, I'll come over when I record and sleep here. And they'll just live here. But then I realized that was ridiculous. So now I moved them and they freaked out, but they, you know, they're going to be all right. Everyone's going to be all right. I'm having a hard time throwing stuff away. There's bits and pieces from different parts of my life. There's canned goods from my relationship to, you know, like from years ago. There's furniture and things from my marriages. It's just, it's a little bit much. You know, it's like an emotional sarcophagi in there. and I think a new page is it will be nice. So Rob Hubel has this great new series that he stars in. I mentioned that he created it. It's Do You Want to See a Dead Body? It's now on YouTube Red. And we had a great talk. I had a good time with him. It was fun. It's a fun one. Fun one with a funny guy. This is me and Rob Hubel. Now, what did you just say?
Are you going to ask me about Glow?
About the show I'm on?
Yeah.
How much you liked it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Everyone
loves it, but I, you know, I'm that asshole.
I've seen so little of what you do.
That's what I appreciate. I'm glad that we are all now at the point where, like, we're like my best friends, I can say, like, yeah, man, I haven't seen it. I don't.
There's so much
I
on.
I can't. There's too
what
much.
What do I owe you? I
There's
like you.
Too
what
much.
You?
I'm psyched that we're all making money. I hope. But I can't. I'm not going to watch your much. Show. I do want to watch your show, though, because everybody loves it.
I know we talked on a live one once before.
Yeah, me and Joe Latrullio.
Joe Latrullio.
That was at the Steve Allen Theater. Yeah.
Oh, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. It was like 5-6 years ago. I don't
it's
know.
It's long, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot has happened.
Yeah.
You have children?
I do. I got a 1-year-old. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How's that?
How's parenting?
Well, I mean,
super
how's
easy.
The kid? All right.
Super easy. She's great. She's yeah. great. Yeah. We got off to a little bit of a rocky start. She came, she was very premature.
Oh.
Yeah. So my advice, if you're having kids, is don't have them prematurely.
Okay.
If you can avoid it.
Do you have control over that?
No, you don't. That's what they...
Like
they
how premature?
She was very early. She was 3 months early. So,
oh my God. Did they have to put her in the thing?
Yep. She was in the thing. She was in the little box for, I think that's the term. It's called a little thing.
Yeah.
They put her in the thing. I'm making jokes about my baby that was premature. But they put her, they put her in the NICU in the little box for 4 months, actually. Yeah.
No
so
kidding.
It was great. That was a big part of my last year. Yeah. It was intense, dude. It was very intense.
But like, was it touch and go? Shit, or just
it's like not anymore. Like nowadays, it's sort of like the Matrix. Like it's very sci-fi what they can do now. Like this baby was born when the baby was born, and you know we don't have to go into this for yeah. days and days. But like she was under 2 pounds. She
oh
was
my.
1 pound.
Oh my
15
God.
Ounces. So you're looking at like a tiny little alien, you know. And what they do is they scoop them up and they run down the hall with them with a bunch of doctors. And then they plug them into all of these machines and gadgets.
Feeding them and everything?
Yep. And nowadays...
That's insane.
They can, you know, pull off miracles. So it was intense.
That's hard.
But yeah, it was really crazy. But I'm super psyched to have health insurance. And now we have this awesome 1-year-old, totally healthy baby.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, she has, the thing that we're waiting to catch up is just her lungs. Like when they're born that early, their lungs are like, you know, are really little.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we can't like, she's not going to climb Everest, tomorrow, but I'm not going to do that anyway.
No.
And
there's no reason for her.
There's
to do
no
that.
Reason.
And you don't need
for,
to either.
What
you know? What no one has to.
What baby needs to be up on Mount Everest?
I don't think you should pressure her to do
you
that.
Know,
kind
although
of thing.
It would get a lot of likes.
Oh yeah,
it would get a lot of likes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that'd be cool. But other than the lungs, she's all good. And then the lungs will catch up. Like,
I'm happy for you. Yeah. That must have been crazy. So you and your wife are over at the hospital every day?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Which is super fun. Tons of fun. Not stressful on your marriage at all. I've only been married, like, we got married like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. And I'm old, and my wife is young, and we were like, I'm old, and I'm going to die.
How old are you?
I'm 48.
Really?
Yeah.
How old is she?
She's 36, 37.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's
it's not like, yeah. I'm not like a pervert.
Yeah.
She's not like 20.
Yeah.
You know,
even then it would be I don't know if that's
offense to 48-year-olds that are dating 20-year-olds.
Perverted. It's a little telling.
It's on the cusp of
I try to look at it, frame it more as like that's sort of a sad situation, and that's not going to end well.
When
for
you
him.
Know that guy, yeah. You know who that
been
yeah.
that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you?
Sure.
Many times?
A couple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where there's like a 20-year difference? A couple times.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what do you talk about?
What the hell difference does that make?
I mean, like, because there are some things with my wife where, like, I can't bring up, you know, hey, let's joke around about the TV shows we watched when we were growing up.
No, I know.
You know,
like, I have that with,
music. You can't talk about, like, music that your girlfriend would be like, I like the Backstreet Boys or whoever.
No, I know. Like, the woman I'm with now is, like, 37, I think.
Yeah.
36, 37. I should really know the exact date.
You should.
And I'm 54, so
you
like,
look great. You moisturize.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, me too. What do you use? No, you don't
Lubriderm.
Have to plug it.
Lubriderm? Facial. The Lubriderm facial, daily okay. facial
I use
moisturizer.
That.
What do you use?
I use that on my privates.
Really?
No.
Interesting.
I use, I love me and you talking about moisturizers.
On my privates, I use saliva.
You do?
Yeah.
Where do you get that?
Right out of my mouth.
I use oil of Olay. Why are we
on
talking
your face?
About this? Yes, on my face. Not on my privates. It's way too expensive for my privates.
Really?
I use your saliva on my privates.
Not when I'm awake.
This podcast is
I
going
tell you,
down.
Obama's
listening to this, shaking his head.
This is better than Obama. What I feel... No, I'm kidding. That was an amazing day, but we didn't talk about this stuff. What I feel bad about right now is saying, what difference does it make when you said, what do you talk about? Here's the truth of the matter. like that came out of my mouth, and I realized like
I
that was
take
insensitive.
It back. I gotta take it back.
Well, I mean, I dated people that were significantly younger than me, but like looking back on it, the woman I'm with now, I'm no emotional giant.
No, nor am I.
Right.
Nor am I.
And you know, quite frankly, the woman I'm with now has really got me sort of level
right on with, the yeah
yeah it took a long time but like the I the younger people the young people I've dated thank God the young people of this country you know I never thought about it much until you start going out places
yeah
and I used to do a whole bit about that where the guy who looks like the person the one that looks like the idiot is the guy
yeah
because it's not
no one's like oh cool
well you know what's
people
up
like,
with that
oh,
right and
yeah.
and you can like you know think that he's taking advantage of her but I've found most of the time that guy's the sucker
yeah
it's not
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know it's
especially
not,
where we live yeah
sure but like I genuinely liked the women who were like significantly younger than me and I learned things from them and granted we couldn't talk about TV shows when we were younger
right
and, but they do have a sensibility that is like you get to a certain age and you're kind of locked in things and you realize how limited your perception is because we're just hung up on how we grew up.
That's right.
And they bring a lot more to the table. They're definitely more capable with, you know, existing in the world than I think I was.
Have you ever been doing something with her and thought like, what am I doing? What am I doing?
Not with this one.
Why am I rollerblading?
No, this one, the one I'm with now is we have a lot in common in those areas.
Yeah.
Where we're like, we don't need to go there.
You both love rollerblading.
No, we don't. We both love like sitting around going like, do we need to go to that? I don't think we need to go.
I don't think
we need to rollerblade. Do you want to rollerblade? No, I can't because it's going to hurt my
Let's buy skateboards. Let's both buy skateboards.
No skateboarding. No,
yeah.
None of that kind of stuff. Like, you know. But
it's always fancy. It's those fancy modes of transportation that screw you up. You know, if you buy like one of the little mono wheel things, you know.
No, she
doesn't get around on that.
We're not doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We're both very practical. But the last one, I used to just feel like.
It sounds like you burn through them.
No. And I've been there with this one for a few years.
Oh, great, great.
But the, no, I'm pretty long-termy.
Yeah.
But there was one there for a while that was significantly younger. I mean, like, you know, embarrassingly younger.
Yeah.
Like, it might have been, I might have been 50. She might have been 23.
Yeah.
And I thought we were sort of
see good. Eye to eye. Yeah.
But as soon as I got outdoors with her, I was like, oh, what am I doing?
Yeah.
There's nothing I could just look at me. Yeah. I'm that guy.
She's
that,
like 10 yards ahead of you.
I'm that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the bit. Just me just scrambling. Hey, where are we going?
Wait up. Wait for me. Did you at the time, you know, like, did you drive like a convertible?
No.
No, that would be bad.
I was never that. And I'm not even sure.
What
how
about
it
like
happened.
A motorcycle with like a sidecar?
No, I'm not that.
Too much.
No,
too much.
I'm not that midlife crisis-y.
Yeah.
I really didn't see any problem with it intellectually or emotionally.
Right.
It was really just sort of like you realize, like, I'm old.
Yeah.
I don't feel that with this one. You feel that one, that with yours?
With my wife? No, not at all.
So there you go. But you're not, it's normal, man.
It's normal.
What, less than 10 years or 10 years?
Just 11, 10 years? 11 years.
11 years?
It's normal. That's it's but it's not 20 years. It's not 20 years.
I like that tone. No, it's good. It's fine.
It's fine.
Ugh, it's just so, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Well, you know, love is a weird thing.
And the end.
Yeah.
That's the end of the podcast. Love is a weird thing.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here.
We figured
music
it out.
Credits. Roll the credits.
Where did you come from?
I was in New York when you...
No, I remember that.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in D.C. in that area.
Oh, really?
In like Virginia, like out in the suburbs. Like
your dad in politics?
No, everybody else's dad was. Everybody else's dad near me worked at the Pentagon.
Oh, really?
And my dad was an airline pilot. Yeah. So
he's a pilot?
Yeah.
You look like a pilot.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You look like the idea of a pilot.
A lot of pilots look like perverts.
Is that true?
I think so.
They women 11 years younger than them?
Yeah. And they wear like the bomber jackets, you know. And they got...
Well, they're all Air Force like, guys,
weird,
right?
Yeah. And they got like weird mustaches.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
Bad haircuts.
But they're the only ones that professionally need aviator glasses.
That's right. They're the only ones legally that should have aviator glasses.
Aviator sunglasses. Yeah.
Everybody else is like ripping them off.
That's right.
Yeah. So my dad flew out of what is now Reagan National Airport. And
for what airline?
An airline that is no longer around called Eastern Airlines.
I remember Eastern Airlines.
Remember Eastern? Yeah.
Sure.
So he flew for Eastern for like a million years.
They had the shuttle.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. Before
the Eastern shuttle, and they had their own building for a while over there at LaGuardia.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Wow, you know a lot about Eastern Airlines. But
what's your dad's name?
Jerry.
Oh, shit.
You know Jerry Hubel?
Yeah, Jerry Hubel, the pilot.
Yeah.
Bomber jacket.
Yeah, you know him. Yeah. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's where we grew up, and everybody else worked at the Pentagon.
So a lot of kids were like, can't tell you what my dad does.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, for real.
Because I don't even know.
Yeah. I think that I don't know how that works. Like, I guess if your dad is like in the CIA or something, what do you tell your kids?
I don't know.
You just say, I work at a sporting goods store.
Let your mom handle it.
Yeah.
Mom will tell you.
Yeah.
No, I don't know what I imagine they come up with some story that they can stick with, you know, but it's like, what if the kid's sort of like, will you take me to work with you?
Take your kid to work day. Yeah.
Can't you go with me to assassinate someone?
Yeah.
South American dictator.
Yeah.
Dad,
this is awesome. Pew, pew, pew. Run like hell. Just keep running.
So you knew those guys, those kids.
Yeah, I knew some of those kids.
What'd your mom do? She work in the business?
No, my mom took care of us mainly. And then when we got older, my mom went to work for PBS.
How many kids were there?
Just me and two brothers. I got an older brother and a younger brother.
How much older?
Just 2 years on either end.
Oh, really?
Much. Yeah.
How'd he turn out?
So we were pretty... we're all pretty close. They're all good.
They're good dudes.
And my little brother is married, and he has like teenage kids. He got married way before me. Yeah, my little brother got married like right out of college, and now has kids that are like, you know, full on teenagers with, you know, going through. You know, and I'm like, I don't know what to tell you, man. I have like a 1-year old.
Yeah,
and so in a cool way, I can ask my little brother for.
Is he still married to the same lady?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so he's like he's solid into it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Solid guy.
Totally into it.
What happened to the older brother?
My older brother is an assassin. No.
What?
No.
For the CIA? Yeah,
yep, for the CIA.
That's amazing.
No, my older brother is he lives in South Carolina. My whole family lives in South Carolina now.
Except for you.
Except for me, yeah. So I'm like the black sheep. But yeah, my older brother is a photographer and, you know, kind of like doesn't really care that much about like money and doing, you know, kind of like
artiste.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Huh.
Exactly like you.
Yeah. Probably a lot like me. Does he have books like this?
Let me know.
No, I just
books.
Mean like, does he have a room like this?
Yeah, he definitely has a room with books and he knows what books are. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's good.
For sure.
That's different than you, right? Do you have a room with books?
I don't. I have a book with magazines. I mean, I have a room with magazines.
Yeah, you do.
Just tons of magazines. Mostly dirty
magazines.
So
now, when you dad, like, did you go up in the cockpit and stuff?
I did, yeah. And this was all, obviously, before, you know, 9/11. Mm-hmm. But back in the day, you know,
free-for-all.
It was a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when we were little, you know, you ride for free.
Yeah.
You fly for free.
Sure, like, yeah, the whole family, right?
Yeah. So I had a little, basically like a little blank checkbook that you could, you know, you go up and you fill out the from to, you know, like where am I going? You go up and you hand them the coupon, depending on where you live. And they just say, okay, have a seat. We'll let you know if there's room. And so that's how we traveled, you know, when I was little. And but yeah, for sure, like my dad would take me on, like my dad would try to like buddy up, you know, hey, let's go on a trip. You know, I'm going to take this kid out on a trip, you know, just me and you.
Yeah.
And so my dad would like take me on a, like a ski trip, you know, we'd go out to wherever. But my dad, I remember one time everybody's getting on the plane and you know, you come down the jetway and you take a right and you go down to your seat.
Yeah.
Well, I came on and my dad like gave me a wink and he like smuggled me into the cockpit. Like I took a left and got into the cockpit. My dad's like, get in the closet. I was like, what? And I'm not joking. My dad's like, get in the closet, be very quiet. I was like, okay. So I'm sitting in like the little coat closet in the cockpit of the Eastern Airlines plane. This is probably why Eastern Airlines is no longer around, by the way. But so I just,
they got an extra seat in the cockpit for like,
for the guy for
like two or three. In
yeah,
there.
Yeah. There's it's called a jump seat.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's for like other pilots that are, you know, going to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I like the voice you have for just anything that has to do with your dad. Other pilots,
super cocky. Yeah.
Let's do a loop.
but so my dad like smuggled me into the cockpit and was just like, hang out here in the closet.
Yeah.
And I'll bring you. So then we took off and he's like, okay, a coast is clear. So I came out and then it's just me in the cockpit with my dad and the co-pilot. And back then they had a third guy, navigator.
Right.
Who would like decide, okay, let's go straight. Okay, take a left.
So there's a pilot, a co-pilot, a navigator,
and
a jump seat. And
that's
you're just standing there.
And I'm just sitting there. Yeah. And well, I would sit on the jump seat.
Yeah.
And so that happened a few times.
Yeah.
And but it was, like you said, it was a free for all. Like I remember some of my memories of it are like, you know, it's just a bunch of guys up there, like talking locker room talk.
Sure. Oh yeah.
You know, talking about flight attendants.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what all went on out on the road, you know?
Yeah.
Like maybe my dad has another family, you know?
It's possible.
Very possible.
Is he still around?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if he listens to the podcast.
No,
I feel
are they still together?
No, they got divorced.
Oh.
But thank
question?
You for asking.
Is there, nah, I know. No,
they're friendly. They're friendly.
Oh,
they're, you know, they're in their 80s, and so they.
Wow.
Yeah, they're friendly. But anyway,
did that come back around?
It did. It did. Well, yes. They went through a pretty, you know, horrible divorce.
Yeah.
And then eventually, I think you get to an age where you're like, fuck it.
I have kids with you. I know you.
Yeah, I know you. I'm not going to kill you, you know? And it's like, so then they just like, now they're like, oh, you put your guns down and it's just like, we're friends.
Oh,
you
know,
in a way, you know?
Yeah.
You can't bring up certain things. Like you can't bring up like the divorce or like, you know, the rental house that you got in the divorce or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
just keep that off the table.
Yeah. 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 Keep that off the table.
But if you bring that stuff up, it all comes right back.
Oh yeah.
Really,
they go right back into it.
I imagine. I can see that.
Yeah. That was stressful.
If I start talking about divorces, I
Are you divorced one time?
Twice.
Times. Three times?
No, twice.
Twice.
The second time, though, that was the bad one.
That was the one that took. The first time didn't take.
The first one, I left.
Oh,
the
really?
The second one, I got left.
Mm.
You knew her. Didn't you know Mishnah? Mm.
I did know her. Yeah. I didn't know her, but yeah. I knew that you were married to her.
Because you were around in New York and then here. Because I think we all got out here at the same time. So your parents are friends. That's nice.
Yeah, it is nice.
And you're friends with your siblings. And everything's good. Everything's good. Flying around in planes in the closet.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to tell you, the button on the dumb pilot story was that it was such a free-for-all in the 80s back then. I remember distinctly sitting up there with them and the like the navigator guy who's sitting over at the side, you know, like looking at the radar or whatever they're looking at, had like pornography like taped to his desk like the inside of a locker room, and he would just, you know, once you take off, it's just like all these centerfolds came down.
Come on.
And you see like 70s bushes everywhere.
Are you serious?
yeah for real. But this was the 80s, but there were still women with 70s.
His plane. I mean, they.
That's a good point. That is a great point.
That means he had to bring that for the flight. He couldn't get through a round trip.
Until this moment, I've never thought about it, but that what you said is true. He had to bring that pornography with him, tape it under the desk, tape it onto the thing. But I'm telling you, I remember naked pictures of like a couple of women, not a crazy amount, but like a couple naked pictures of ladies, and be like, hey, guys, when you're not flying the plane, look at this. Look at these boobs.
That guy.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he was like a character, and they're just sort of like, I'm going to have to fly with him in his pictures again.
Yeah, pervy Dave.
Yeah.
Come on, Dave.
Come on, put him away.
Put your thing back in your pants.
Kid's here.
Yeah, my son's here. Look out the window, boy. Look at that. Look at that cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty exciting.
It was cool to to have a dad that did that. I used to like walking through airports with my dad. You know, it's like
he was in the uniform.
Yeah. And you'd walk through and you'd be like, yeah, my dad's the bus driver.
But he was an Air Force guy.
Yeah, he was an Air Force guy and a Marine pilot too. Yeah,
in Vietnam.
No, somehow he missed Vietnam. I don't know. Maybe he's like, I don't
after?
Know. I'll have to ask him.
Before, middle?
I can't remember. I don't know. Might have just skipped his unit.
But that's
somehow
how he learned, huh?
Yeah. I think that's... And now my little brother's a pilot. My little brother flies for UPS.
Really?
No plug. I don't know if you have, you know, if they're an advertiser.
I had a UPS guy over this today.
You did? Was it my brother?
I don't think so. He wasn't in a
plane.
Pilots, he was in a brown truck.
The pilots do double duty. The pilots, they'll land.
Yeah, it was weird. He did, a plane landed on my street.
Yeah, there he is.
So he had was he in the Air Force?
No.
He just learned?
I guess he was. He was in the, but in the, like, the Air Force Reserves. That's what it was, yeah. I've never been in the military.
Right.
Have you been in the military?
No. I would remember that.
Yeah, I would remember it too.
Yeah, no, I was in the military.
Have you ever?
I think I've done
a USO tour?
I'm over the age now.
You might not qualify.
No, not anymore. I have not done a USO tour.
Oh,
have you?
Yeah, I did. I went to Iraq with in 2007. Me and Rob Riggle. Rob Riggle set it up. He's a Marine.
I know. Rob, I've talked to Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah. Solid guy.
Yeah.
Marine guy.
American.
But friendly guy.
Good, yeah.
Decent.
Very
color.
Friendly. Midwestern.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Great guy. And so he set it up. So we went over there, me and him and Horatio and Paul Scheer, and did a bunch of comedy for the troops.
How was that?
You know, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome to the troops.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying now. It's
like
10 years later, and I'm still telling them you're welcome.
Not thank you?
Nope. You're welcome for the comedy.
Yeah.
No, of course. It was amazing. It was incredible.
Did they enjoy it?
Did they? I think they did. You know, it opens your eyes to when you go over there, you do see it's all 18-year-old dudes from like Alabama. You know, and they are, we went over there during the Iraq.
And you guys
situation.
Are sort of, you're not standard stand-ups per se.
No. We went over there and did like a bunch of sketches and like making fun of the Pentagon. And they actually told us like we could do whatever we wanted. So we had like a bunch of kind of like funny bits. And then we did like, we threw a bunch of sketches together. We did some kind of like dating game where we got like a few guys up, and then like Horatio might have come out in like a wig. I don't know.
Really?
But listen, all I'm telling you is it killed.
It did?
It killed.
Yeah?
We killed in Iraq.
Is that true?
I can say that I killed
in
Iraq.
Is it true?
I shouldn't say that.
Is it true?
I feel like the shows went pretty well, but
now,
only because they're they're really hungry for comedy.
Right. But I
that's
mean,
why you should go over there.
Oh, no, but I mean, like, are you going to the smaller camps?
Yes, we went to...
so it must just be terrifying. You guys, like,
it was really scary. We took Black Hawk helicopters everywhere we went, for real. And they took us to what are called FOBs, forward operating bases. Right. And we went way in, like, I think, like, northern Iraq.
Right.
And
it's not like the Bob Hope Arena
situation. No. We were sleeping in shipping containers. They had, like, shipping containers, and they, like, punched holes in the thing for windows, and then they had a couple cots in there. And, I mean, it was not comfortable, but they take good care of you. And then the main thing is, like, you just get to meet all these people that are super psyched to have anyone come over there and entertain them.
Yeah, definitely. That's great, man. Good for you doing that.
Yeah. One time we were flying in a helicopter going to, like, the next place.
Yeah.
And it was a really long trip. And it was like a 2-hour flight. And so they open up the doors on the side. And so there's just hot wind blowing in. You know, it looks like the... Oh,
sounds.
Great sound effects. Yeah. Great sound effects.
What, just what I did?
Yeah. Dude, you're wasting your time. You got to get into the sound effect.
I keep trying to get my agent to do...
There's no reason why we couldn't use that in movies. No, there's no
reason.
Why even put film in the camera?
How's that?
Even better. That's a motorboat, right?
No.
It's jet
kinda,
ski?
It's kind of, you know the sound, I don't know.
As just a fart?
No. It was a generic wind sound.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. But so we were flying to the next base, and it was like a 2-hour flight, and everyone was, like, trying to fall asleep. And, you know, they got in either door, they have a guy in the door with one of those big guns on a stand, huge machine.
I've seen that in movies.
Yeah. It looks like Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, right.
So we're flying along. Everyone's, like, kind of half asleep. And all of a sudden, you just hear that someone on the helicopter is just like, like the loudest machine gun. Someone's just spraying down the desert, hailing down a hellfire of artillery. And I look over, I'm like screaming, Shear is screaming, Riggle's screaming, and it's Horatio sitting there laughing his ass off, shooting the machine. Like, the gunner was just like, yeah, come on over, man. And, like, let Horatio just light up the desert. Because, you know, there's nothing out there. There's just nothing.
Yeah.
So Horatio's just like, brah, 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 brah. It was terrifying. It was so scary. But that's, like, my main memory.
It's like that guy did what your dad did with Horatio.
Yeah, it was the same guy.
The gun.
Yeah, get over here.
Come here, kid.
Get over here and play with his gun.
Yeah. You guys didn't know it was happening until it was happening?
Mm-mm. I thought we were taking heat.
Oh, man.
So I can say I went, in a way I can say I've served.
Saw some action.
Yeah, man. I was in the shit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
So what did you go, you went to college, and when did you start doing the comedy?
Well, yeah, I went to New York. I always wanted to be in comedy, but I was, I didn't know how to do it.
But did we skip something? Did you go to college?
I went to college, yep.
Where?
Did we skip something? I went to Clemson in South Carolina.
Clemson.
Go Tigers. We won the...
How many schools have said that?
I don't know if you're...
Go Tigers.
I don't know.
A lot of them.
A couple of them. But no big deal. We are the football national champions.
Really?
Currently. You didn't know that?
What do I know about sports?
I don't know. You're wearing a football jersey.
Hey, shut up. Don't tell people. See, I don't know.
If you had answered the door in a football jersey,
you would have been like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Are you a big sports guy?
Not really, no.
Did you play ball?
No, I played soccer. You know, I'm a white guy. I played soccer. Like,
what does that mean?
When I was little. It's just like a suburban.
Right.
It seems like
contemporary suburban.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could have been a quarterback back in the day. You're 48.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
I could have gone pro. Damn it. But, you know, I played soccer in high school, and, you know, I wasn't great.
They didn't even have soccer in high school when I was in high school.
It wasn't even invented then.
I don't even think so.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just didn't know the teams we had.
Yeah. A lot of people think that I'm a sports guy, and I appreciate it. I really do. I don't know.
Riggle is, right?
Riggle is a...
maybe not.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. I think he played, he might've played football and stuff. And, he's a big like sports fan too.
Oh,
he is. Yeah. He's from Kansas City and he's right. He's weighing all those sports teams.
Yeah. Cause I think
he plays golf too. I'm not good at golf.
I'm happy to hear this. Cause I think I might've like, I had Riggle in here and I prejudged him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was probably not the kind of guy I would like in high school.
Yeah.
But he got better, I think.
Well, you would.
He's a nice guy, genuinely a good guy.
For sure. But you would think that you don't realize there's a lot of layers to him, and you don't realize that going into it. You think like.
Decent guy, though.
Yeah.
And I imagine some of those guys I prejudged, even in high school, might have turned out to be decent guys.
Not many of them.
No?
Not a lot of them.
Think it's a small number.
Is there a chainsaw?
Probably. The guy comes around with the chainsaw sometimes.
Are we in danger?
No, he just runs down the street waving it around.
Yeah, we got to get the hell out of here.
We're like, there's the guy again.
Mark, we got to get out of here.
Every day, 4 o'clock, chainsaw man.
Chainsaw man, we got to get out of here.
I would say that's probably a guy with a leaf blower.
No, that's a chainsaw.
Is it?
We're in danger.
Oh, do you want me to? Let's just ride it out.
We'll see what happens.
I just want to know if it's going to stop and whether I have to go around and shut all the fucking windows.
Do you have like a
what?
Like a producer's assistant that'll go out there and give him $100 to say,
yeah, like a shoot.
Get out of here.
How do those conversations happen? It's just sort of like, you know, you hear dogs.
Well, when you're on a set. I think that's a racket. I think that if you're filming a TV show, a lot of people think like, oh, I can make $100.
I'm sure they can.
By the way, if you're listening to this, here's an easy way to make $100. And when you see people filming something, crank up your, start honking the horn, start yelling.
Doing that yard work with the loud equipment.
Get your leaf blower out.
And then some like kid will come over.
Yeah, some 18-year-old kid will
with
come
a headset
over
on.
And be like, hey man, I'm so sorry to bother you. Is there any way you could not do that? We're rolling. People are like, oh really, you're rolling? Because I'm trying to make my yard nice. You fuck.
I don't have any time during the week other than now to do this.
Now's the time to blow my
leaves. Sorry. You guys are just going to have to wait. How long are you going to be? Oh, at least an hour?
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me talk to my boss.
We were shooting something recently in a park out here in Los Angeles where we all live. And this old man came out and he said that we were on his property. And we said, no, this is a park.
Yeah.
And he said, no. This is my property. So, and he wouldn't get out of the shock.
He's a crazy man.
Yeah, he was a crazy man.
Yeah.
You pronounced it correctly. He's a crazy man.
Crazy
man. He's a wolfman. And so we offered to pay him and he said, I don't want your money. We're like, really? Like, what is this about? So we finally had to like call like the county like tax assessor and have them like email us the property and show him like we're on a park.
Really?
Get out of here.
It went that far?
It took a long time.
Oh my God.
I still don't. Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know what he wanted. If you're listening to this, you piece of shit, go back in there.
Oh, I know what this is all leading to. I'm going to have to close the windows.
Okay. I'll fill time while you close the windows. Hey everybody, it's Rob Ewell. Listen, Mark's outside, so I'm going to fill time. Call me on my cell phone right now. What's happening? 212-555-1212.
Oh, you used the 555 number. You're a professional.
I'm noticing this glow calendar. You guys have calendars for your TV show.
No, one of the cast members made that. Yeah, Chris Lowell, who took a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
Had those made. He's also on the show that you didn't watch. So
I'm going to watch it.
I don't do what you want to do. It's your fucking life.
I will watch it.
All right. So
I went to college
Clemson.
At Clemson.
Tigers. Yep. Go Tigers.
That's how we got distracted.
Didn't play football.
Didn't play football. They are the national champions.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah, you said that.
You can catch them anytime, every Saturday.
What did you study there?
Marketing. Only because, here's the thing. I wanted to.
You didn't know what you wanted.
I didn't know what I wanted to do. Here's what I thought.
That's one of those majors. Marketing. What does that mean?
Management. What is that?
What did you learn? What are the classes? Mark, it's like
it's business, you know. It's like hey, how do we promote this product?
Really,
that kind of stuff. Sort of, you know, in a way.
That's
a whole major. Consumer behavior, you know. Why do people buy the things they buy? That's a whole major. You go to class and they're like, what's going on with why do people act like this in grocery stores?
Is economics part of it?
Yes.
You take economics?
All that. Economics, finance, marketing.
You did all
management.
That.
Yeah.
Did you take it in?
A little bit. Here's the thing. I wanted to, at the time, this is all going somewhere.
Yeah.
At the time, I thought I wanted to be in comedy, but I didn't know how to do it. So I thought, oh, you know what I'll do? I'll get into advertising.
Makes sense. Like you go at copywriting?
Yeah, that's right. That's what I thought. I thought I'd move to New York and get into advertising.
And you would write jingles and blurbs?
Blurbs and bloopers.
Yep. And what are those? Catchphrases.
Catchphrases?
Yeah. How about a hamburger?
Hey, let go of the beef.
Hey, don't eat that.
Hey,
eat this.
Get that out of your mouth. Put this in your mouth.
Yeah.
You weirdo.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Get that out of your mouth. Put this in your mouth.
Get that out of your mouth. Put this in your mouth.
Yeah. That's
don't
good.
Steal that, people listening. So I thought I would work in advertising. So yeah. Because I didn't have the here's the lesson that I'm trying to get across.
Convey.
Yeah. I didn't have the courage to say to myself, why don't you just get into comedy and start writing jokes?
And did you know that was a possibility?
I didn't know how you do it. Like, how do you do it? Like, you just start.
No interest in doing stand up.
That seemed pretty scary to me. And I'll tell you why. I remember going to like Luna Lounge. And
this is after college when you went to New York.
This is in New York, yeah.
I want to hear about the dark times of floundering.
Floundering.
Where you couldn't get a job in New York and everything was terrible.
For real. I thought I went to interview at...
college.
Yep.
So right after college, you're like, I'm moving to New York.
Moving to New York.
Yeah.
More or less. I moved to Aspen, Colorado.
What'd you do there?
Skied for a year.
Wow. Nice. Tolerant parents, a little money in the bank. Good for you.
I don't know what... I think my parents thought, go ahead.
Yeah.
Good luck. Enjoy it.
How are you at the skiing?
Really good. You want to see me?
Yeah, do it.
Look at this video on my phone. it was a great time.
Yeah.
Did
you teach skiing?
No,
or you just lived up there?
I worked in hotels. I worked in hotels. And at that time, the Aspen Comedy Festival was going on. You remember that?
I was part of it. What year?
Yeah. This was like early 90s.
I was there in 95.
You were?
Yeah.
I missed you.
That was not a good year for me.
But I had, I bought tickets. Gary Shandling performed there when I lived out there. And I had front row tickets to Gary Shandling.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Yeah. And I didn't know, but years later, me and Rob Riggle would go to the Aspen Comedy Festival with a little sketch show that we did, and that's how we got agents. Anyway, no big deal.
Came full circle. It's kinda.
Totally did.
But you at the time
didn't
Gary
know what
Shandling,
I was doing. I was like,
you weren't sitting there going, no, I want to do that.
I wanted to do comedy, didn't know how to get into it other than stand-up. Stand-up seemed too scary. I didn't think, what was I going to do? An average-looking white dude from the suburbs of like northern, like what's
you
my
do
take?
Look like that?
What? Yeah, like what are people going to do? Like, oh, that guy's got a hot take on stuff, you know? So,
but you knew you wanted to be funny,
but I knew that I could be funny, and I felt like I could do it, but I didn't know until I got to New York. I hadn't seen improv before.
So you go to Aspen for a year, you ski, you work at hotels,
work at
see
hotels,
Gary Shandling.
See Gary Shandling. And then
you're like, oh, time for real life.
Yep, time for real life. So then I moved to New York
and
try to get into advertising. Doesn't go well.
How'd that go? I'd like to hear some of those stories.
Hey,
Rob.
Hey, what's up? I'm Rob, and I want to work here. Oh, cool. Where else have you worked? Nowhere. Oh, cool. Where are you coming from? I just lived in Aspen. Oh, cool. What do you mean? Oh, yeah. I like to ski and smoke weed. Oh, okay. Get out of here. So that's sort of how that went. I was in. So I floundered around, and at the time, I was living with a couple guys, and one of the guys had a girlfriend. I had roommates in New York. It was super poor.
Where in Queens?
No, I lived with these investment. Everyone I lived with was making money. They were all like these investment banker guys.
How'd you get hooked up with those guys?
Like a friend of a friend. They said, hey, this guy's got a floor that you can sleep on. So I moved to New York, and I lived in a place on the Upper West Side, but was sleeping under the stairs. Literally, they didn't have a room for me. I slept under the stairs. In this place, and I had like a little egg crate. You remember those egg crate mattresses? Like in this room.
Yeah.
Like the things that are soundproof. These are my old mattresses.
No, come on. You could have done better. Why do we do that to ourselves?
Because I literally had no money. I moved to New York and I had no money.
No friends.
I didn't know anyone. I thought, I'm going to move to New York. I'm going to get into advertising. I'm going to give myself a year. I'm going to give myself 1 year. And I didn't know anything about New York. I didn't know anyone in New York.
So wild, right?
I didn't know where I was going.
Like this, and like, that must have been sad times.
Dude, I remember going, I had temp jobs.
It's getting sadder.
That's what I was going to tell you. Yeah. Is that my roommate's girlfriend worked at a temp agency. And she's like, all right, do you know Microsoft Word? No. Do you know Excel? What? Do you know how to make a spreadsheet? No, I don't know any of that. Do you have a suit? No. I didn't have those things. So she would go, okay, here, go to this place tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Don't be late. You're going to answer the phones.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so I would just go to these places and she would lie for me. She would just say, yep, this guy who's coming in, he's a real sharp customer. And he knows Microsoft Word and in Excel, and he can type. And I was like, no, I can't. I remember I had a temp job at the Time Warner or Time Life.
Yeah.
And my job was inputting zip codes of people that subscribed to Time Magazine.
Oh, wow.
So they're like, here you go. And then one time I had a job at Goldman Sachs for a couple of days.
And Steve Bannon there?
Great dude.
Yeah.
Really
was
great.
Was he fun then?
Yeah, really great guy.
How about that Gary Cohn? Was he there?
He was probably there.
Yeah.
He's probably up and coming guy. But my job, you know, again, like I would temp for these people that their receptionist was sick. So they would send me in and I would be like, hey, what do you need, Steve? And they'd be like, I don't know, staple this stuff. And so they'd give me stuff to staple.
Yeah.
And I distinctly remember barging into a very important meeting in a conference room in Lower Manhattan in like Goldman Sachs. And I had stapled all of these reports together. And I just said, hey, Steve, I'm done putting all the reports together. All these guys in suits whip around and look at me like, why are you in here? We're a bank. We're trying to solve, you know, we're trying to take money from people.
We are running the world.
Yeah, we're controlling the money.
We're controlling all the money everywhere. Yeah. And you're happy with yourself?
Get out of here. So that's what I did.
You're proud of yourself that you stapled some things?
Yeah. So I did that for a couple of years in New York. Uh-huh. And then
on the bridge.
And then I'm on the bridge.
some guy comes up to you and says, and starts an improv.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I started taking improv classes in New York. And what
drove you to do that?
I saw my roommate at the time. Yeah. I had switched roommates now.
Yeah.
And my roommate knew.
Did you have a room now?
At this point, I had a room. Yep.
Oh, that's good.
And I was living with a guy who was a funny guy, also trying to get his shit together, a guy named Mike Henry, who went on later to work for Family Guy. And he created the Cleveland Show.
Oh, yeah.
Really funny writer. But at the time, we were just broke dudes living in New York. And he was just a friend of a friend. And he said, hey, you should go see this improv show with me. I'm going to go see this improv show. And it was that show, ASCAT, that Amy Poehler.
At the old UCB?
Yeah, not even. They hadn't even started the theater yet. So it was like they would do them in these little pop-up places.
Right.
And so I went to see an ASCAT, and it was like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and Adam McKay and like John Glazer and Stephen Colbert and like all these, you know, big Chicago comedy future superstars who had just moved. They had all just moved to New York and were getting it going. You know, I think some of them were, I think like, I'm sure McKay was writing for SNL or something like that. And anyway, I saw that show and changed my life. I was like, oh, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do that.
That's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. If you don't want to do stand up, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
And they hadn't even gotten the theater together yet. But when they, couple weeks later, I think they started this theater and started doing classes. And I was like, yep.
Original one, the one with the weird seats, the old strip bar.
That's right. Yeah, it was an old strip bar on the
tan. And they got the seats from the bus terminal or somewhere.
Yeah. And it was an old strip bar, and they used to get a lot of weirdos coming in there looking for strip shows. And we'd be doing, you know, improv and sketch shows, and people want to jerk off.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, no.
They had to turn away a lot of Orthodox Jews.
Hmm.
The Hasidim used to come.
It's true. You've heard that story.
Yeah.
It is true. Yeah, there was, for some reason, a lot of Hasidic Jews would come into the theater looking for strip shows, and we'd be like, oh.
And some of them would stay for the comedy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've heard that story.
I've heard a couple of versions of it.
Yeah, it's true.
It's true.
But we used to have to like go out on the street and hand out flyers.
On that street?
No. We go down to Union Square and other cool places, you know, the East Village. And we try to hit up college students to come to our improv and sketch shows.
Right. I remember. And, what street was it on, though? Like 22nd?
22nd Street. Yeah.
That's right.
So, and that's how we would get people to come see our shows.
And that was the one, like, Matt lived at top of it.
Yeah. Walsh. Yeah. Walsh lived above the theater. Yep. Yeah. And so we would just try to pack the house. And at that time, it's not like it is now where there's like a million people trying to do shows there. It was like, we need shows, you guys. You know, Walsh and Besser and Amy and Ian, they'd be like, you guys write a show. Put up a show tomorrow, you know.
Yeah.
So we would just throw up shows. And
really, it was like that.
Yeah, it was really like you had
They needed time filled.
They needed time filled. Yeah, I mean, literally, if you had an idea for a sketch show, you could do it.
But were you taking classes or just hanging out?
Yep, taking classes.
So it was the original four teaching.
Yep.
And that was it.
That was it. That was it. And then, like, you know, a year later or a couple of years later, you would start, like, I started teaching there. So I started teaching improv.
Who'd you take with?
I tried to only take with Ian. I took a class with Besser and with Amy. They were great. But when I got in with Ian, that was my dude.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Ian went on to like write on, I think he was a showrunner maybe on Key and Peele, but like there's something about him that he's a machine.
He always scared me.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that's like...
He intimidated me.
Yeah, he's kind of a... Yeah, he's...
Out of all of them.
Yeah.
Couldn't get a handle on that guy.
You can't get a read on him.
Yeah.
But comedy-wise, was a machine and knew how to make any improv scene funny. And like you would do... You know, when you would take classes with him, you would do a terrible, terrible fucking improv scene, just a disaster. And he'd be like, okay, here's what you said, and then here's where it went. And this is where it took a bad turn. And he was so like analytical about it and scientific about it. He could show you this is where it went off the rails. If you had just gone in this direction,
right,
that would have made sense. And then you guys would have had a funny scene.
Right.
And that was...
But you can't control that shit in the moment.
No. You just have to fail, dude. Like we I'm telling you, man, I feel bad for all of the people that came to early shows that we did so many. Horrible,
that's all right.
Horrible, I mean, shows.
Yeah.
But you know, you do learn very quickly, oh, that was bad.
But that still happens.
For sure.
There's got to be plenty of shitty shows. How many?
For sure. But less so as you figure it out.
Sure.
Like eventually you figure out like, oh, well, these are the people I want to perform with. These are the guys that I think are
right,
funny.
Well, I guess now, you know, you do enough of the sort of class-driven shows, like like there's not a desperation for shows anymore. I imagine you guys were probably out in front of audiences, regular audiences, before you were probably ready.
For sure. And
just
people be like,
oh boy.
People leave there and be like, what was that? You know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why so many people think that improv is bad because, like, probably because of me.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just, that's all I hear.
And the guys that I came
people
up with.
People are like, I don't like improv. Because
Steve of Rob Hubel.
Rob Hubel.
Thank you for calling me Steve.
Wow. Do you have a brother named Steve?
No.
Where did Steve come from?
I don't know.
Why'd I call you Steve?
I love it.
Rob.
Steve. I'm going by Steve.
Steve
Please
Hubel.
Please tweet at me, at Steve Hubel. Please.
I know who you are. So
that's how,
and you started teaching.
So I started teaching improv classes, and then right about that time, I started doing commercials. A commercial agent, started scouting. You know, the theater started to get a little bit of heat on it. You know,
who's there now at that point?
At that point, it was like Cordry, Ed Helms, Andy Daly, Riggle, Shear,
and they all came up through the ranks.
They all came up. Yeah, we all started around the same time.
It's amazing.
But what changed things for me was I got a commercial agent, and then I started getting commercials, and then that just gives you some ability to tread
money.
Water. Yeah, yeah. So
national commercials.
Yeah, so I got really lucky in that world, and that kind of bought me some time.
Did you get on a roll with them?
I did. Yeah,
like you were that guy on the commercial for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that guy again.
That was my thing. Yeah. Yeah, I had a commercial in New York that they used to play before the movies, and it was called "Inconsiderate Cell Phone Man," and it was just me being a jackass on my cell phone, talking really loud.
Oh, this is to tell everyone to be quiet.
Telling everybody, to turn your phone
off.
There's
a movie commercial.
That's right. It's a movie commercial. So that was like my first like one of my first pain.
Oh, so you're walking around New York and people are like, dude,
hey, inconsiderate. No, everybody said like insensitive cell phone. No one could ever get it right.
Right.
So that was my thing for like a few people. Everybody called me that.
So
great.
So you're improvising, you're making money doing commercials that you're not comfortable with, but you can't fight it.
No, you can't fight it.
Of course, everyone in that world is sort of like, no, it's good, dude.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did a really embarrassing, like utterly humiliating Olive Garden commercial that, it was really, cause I used to try to only do the funny ones, you know, I would just go out for the funny commercials.
Right.
And like you said, I got on kind of a roll, but then I did this one for Olive Garden. It was like strangely sincere. And they were like, they tricked me. I came in and they're like, hey, you're funny. You can just improvise, do whatever you want.
Right.
Do whatever you want. So they let me do that like all day long. And then like they wore me out. I got really tired. And then at the end of the day, they go, hey, let's just for fun, just for me.
Do a serious one. Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? They're like, yeah, just totally like dramatic. And say the waitress will come over and give you like your soup, salad and breadsticks.
Yeah.
And she'll say, hey, what are you guys here for? Are you guys celebrating? And then you look at her and you go, no, it's just Monday, but say it real sincere like that. And I was like, okay. So I did that. And then the commercial came out.
Yeah.
And, it was really just that, just really just straight, like Monday. Looking right into the camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was,
the idea was like Olive Garden's always good.
It's always good. Mm-hmm. You don't have to celebrate.
Yeah,
you can come here on just fucking.
That's when most people go to Olive Garden.
Yeah, it's usually for birthday parties and weddings.
It's just a casual place to eat on
Mondays. Or just Mondays.
Wow.
So I was upset about that.
Did people like judge you for it?
Lot of people started making fun of me.
With the Just Mondays wine?
Yeah.
Are you celebrating?
Yeah, and people say, hey, what is it? What day is it? And I'd say, Just Monday. Yeah, it was a bummer.
Yeah.
But it's hard to, you know, it's hard to...
You learned your lesson.
I learned my lesson. Don't ever...
Not be funny.
Not be funny. When they tell you to, hey, you want to try one just for me? when they're lying to
you. Yeah, that's the one they're going to use.
That's the one they're going to use.
So when did you start making movies and television?
Well,
you and Aziz and
me and Aziz and Paul, did this MTV show. We got our own TV show on MTV. This is back when is MTV still on? I think it's still on.
I don't know.
You know, does your girlfriend know?
No. Does your wife know?
Oh how dare you? How dare you?
I think it is on still. But I'm looking at your credits, but you did some shit with the Upright Citizens Brigade when they had the show on Comedy Central.
Yeah. But total, just like background, like, you know.
And what'd you do for The Awful Truth?
Oh, I was a producer. Yeah.
With Michael Moore. How did that happen?
Well, it was all interconnected. A friend of mine from UCB was working on for Michael Moore. And he said, hey, do you want to pitch Michael Moore some comedy ideas?
Field pieces? Right?
Some field pieces, uh-huh. Yeah. And so I said, yes, you know, for sure. And I was a big fan of Michael Moore's movies. And so I just sat down and I wrote all these, you know, ideas for field pieces, sent them to Michael Moore and just somehow got lucky. And he was like, yep, these are funny. Let's meet this guy. So that was when I was doing commercials and everything.
Yeah.
And
all simultaneously.
Yep. All
simultaneously. Daily Show too?
Yep. So then The Daily Show came right after that.
Only did a few,
yeah, for like 6 months. It was during the first Bush election is when I was at the
right. Why didn't it stick? Why weren't you?
Well, because I wasn't very good. Uh-huh. I wasn't a very good field producer.
Oh, really?
At the Daily. It was hard for me because back then, you remember how the Daily Show used to be like way back? You would go out.
Was it Jon Stewart?
Yeah.
Oh,
but way back before they figured out, you know, before they really hit their stride, I think politically,
yeah,
they would do those funny field pieces where you would kind of go out with the correspondent and you kind of like a little bit make fun of the person. You try to find a weirdo that was out there, you know, drilling for oil in his backyard.
Right.
And you'd go out there and you kind of make fun of him a little bit. Well, that's kind of when I was there. And then, And then after that, Bush got elected and they were like, we're not doing this anymore. And John, I think John was like, we're not going to start, we're not going to make fun of people. Like, now let's get political, you know? So that's
with Bush too.
Yeah. With once he got,
W.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once that happened, then the show kind of shifted and they sort of became, you know, super political, and they didn't really do those kind of field pieces anymore. And, but also I just wasn't very good at it. It field producing.
And it said that you, like, here I'm looking like McEnroe. You did that?
Oh, man.
I think I appeared on that show.
Is on
that
the possible? John McEnroe show?
Yeah.
Yes, it's very possible.
I feel like I did.
Yeah, we had a friend that said, hey, why don't you guys come out here to the John McEnroe comedy show? You know, John McEnroe is a nice guy.
Yeah.
Question mark. And they gave him a comedy show.
Yeah, like a syndicated talk show.
Like a syndicated talk show.
I remember, who else was on that? Because I remember doing it and being like, oh, you work here?
Yeah. Me and Shear were there writing jokes for John McEnroe, which was tough. That's a tough job to try to write jokes for a tennis pro, you know?
And I remember the whole thing felt stilted and
awkward. Yeah. And we would, you know, the guests would come on and they'd be like, hey, here's a funny idea for you and John. And we would try to write like a sketch for the guest and
right.
John, and it would never go well.
Right.
But that was like a very short lived show. And,
right.
But you know, again, back then I was just like, yeah, if I can make a check, get a paycheck.
But you're also doing funny movies, little things.
Well, then I just started to pop up. Like through UCB, I started to get little breaks. Like McKay started directing movies, you know?
Right.
And so
knew him at UCB?
I knew him from the comedy world at UCB. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I started to get like little cameos and like the other guys,
right.
Will Ferrell, right. And stuff like that. And so I started kind of popping up doing that. And then around that same time, me and Paul and Aziz did Human Giant. And that kind of opened up a lot of doors for us in the comedy world. We started getting like more opportunities like on sitcoms,
yeah.
And stuff like that. So
it kind of blew up and it helped Aziz's stand up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he had long, weird mullet hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Paul, he didn't have any hair.
He didn't have any hair at that point.
You had your white guy hair.
I had my white guy hair.
Is it all about the hair? But
you
that
really
show,
you love guys' haircuts.
I do. I take it in.
But that show helped us out a lot. That show helped us kind of all get going.
And you built that at UCB.
We would test. Yeah, we would go out with we used the same director, the guy that created the show with us, Jason Wallner, who's super funny, smart writer and director. And he did other shows like Eagle Heart.
I know that
something.
Guy. Yeah,
you know Jason. So
I interviewed him.
Yeah. So we would go out and we would shoot sketches, and then we would take them to UCB. We'd show them in front of a live audience. And if it got a laugh, then we would put it in the TV show. So that was a great, easy way to sort of
best
test.
Way to do it.
Yeah. Just show.
David Sedaris does that.
Oh, really?
With his writing.
Oh, you just do a live reading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he'll like, you know, tweak things.
Yeah.
So, okay. So it all takes off.
So that's how it went career wise
with Human Giant. Giant.
Yep. And that got me going.
And then the other big thing is Children's Hospital.
Children's Hospital.
That
was just friends. That was Cordry was a friend.
But you did a lot. That's a lot of episodes, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. But Mark, those are 15 minute episodes. That's not in syndication. That's
those.
No money. I haven't had like a money gig like you. I haven't had like one of these sweet, cushy podcast
deals.
What
about The League?
I was in like 10 episodes of
The
League.
That's not bad. Where was my money gig?
The podcast.
Well, it seems like you've had some pretty good gigs.
Well, yeah, Transparent has been great. I do.
Are you good in that?
Transparent now.
That's
you don't
good.
Watch it.
I did. I watched your first season.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
I thought it was good because, you know, you were aggravated the first season.
Yeah, and you get to be, it's fun to do, for me, more serious stuff because, you know, I've done a lot of like jackasses and obnoxious guys and these kind of idiots, which I love, and I feel. You know, it's in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But it's fun to do a show where like, oh, this writing is really good.
Oh yeah. And you can just like, and just be in it.
Just say these words.
Trust it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just like, you know, oh, is this the script? Hey, good job, man.
Yeah. That's how
this
I felt
really
about
good.
Glow. Yeah.
Yeah. Where you don't feel like, oh, I,
someone's
I'm not going to say that.
Yeah,
I'm not
really
gonna
like,
say, that's not the way I would
I better
do
make
it.
This funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what's great about Transparent is like, it's the writing is really great. And the directing, like they just make it look amazing.
It is.
You know?
It's a ballsy show.
Thank you for saying that. But yeah.
And also you were good in The Descendants. That was
a
good part.
Yeah.
Pretty
good people in that movie.
Clooney.
Yeah. He's pretty good.
Was that intimidating?
Yeah. And Alexander Payne directed that movie, so yeah.
He's good.
But you don't want to be the weak link in that movie, you know? Like, I got to go out to Hawaii where they shot it, and they show up, and it's Clooney, and it's Alexander Payne, who's, like, the best director in the world, and then, like, me.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
I hope I don't drop the ball. So
well, I thought you did good.
Thanks, buddy.
We're not done talking about Clooney. So you meet Clooney. Nice guy.
I meet Clooney. Nice guy. And I thought that very personable guy.
Seems like it.
Like, you know, when you're shooting those things and you're in between scenes, you're just hanging out. You're sitting around in someone's house where you're shooting, and you're just sitting on a couch next to George Clooney. And I remember at one point we were both on our phones and we're looking at our phones, and I thought, like, I'm just going to ask him for his phone number. Like, I'm just going to say,
hey, George,
George, we should have drinks. But I lost my nerve. I didn't do it. I had it.
Had you talked to him previous or had you been talking?
No.
So this would have been kind of the first time.
It would have been the first, you know, meet a guy, you hang out for a few days, and but he's really cool. Yeah. He's super funny.
Yeah.
He's always doing pranks. You know, everybody says that, and he is, you know, he's always playing pranks.
You personally hadn't talked to him that much.
No, but I woke up one day and I went into my trailer, and there was a bucket of his urine, and it was above my door, and it poured. Wouldn't that be great if he was like pranking me for reason?
But really,
really gross, like aggressive,
crass prank,
bucket of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
No, hey, man, I put a bucket of shit under your couch.
I know that feeling though, because I'll talk to people in here, and I don't know how people see me or where.
What everybody says you're a prankster.
Well, no, set. Like what position I hold in the world. Because like, sometimes I'm like, you want me to just email you that stuff? Or should I call or have someone call your assistant?
Like, so you're kind of fishing around. Like,
right, I get your number? But I always go like, who should I get in contact with?
Yeah.
And like, well, you can just call me. I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I'm going
to get John Hamm's phone number.
All right. Yeah. Do you ever
do
that?
I just bother them.
Do you go
and
through?
And I just like text.
Hey, bro. You
what's
up?
What's up, Hamm? How's it going?
I
very rarely will text any celebrity that I've ever, unless
I would like to go through, that would be a great episode of the podcast where we just go through your phone and we don't give out the numbers, but we see who they are.
Do you want me to get it?
Who you got? If you have your phone handy, I wouldn't mind.
I feel like it's in the other room.
I wouldn't mind a sampling.
That'd be fun. Hold on.
Okay. I'll fill time. Hey guys, Mark's going in the other room. And so what I wanted to do was tell you that, you can call me on my phone anytime. I'll pick up. I swear to God, I'll pick up. 212-555-1212. Call me right now. We can chat. We can talk. Oh, here he comes. Be cool.
Wait, why don't we do this?
Be cool. Here he is.
Have you been drinking all day?
No.
Oh.
I came from another podcast where they said, do you want a beer? And I said, yeah.
Oh, because I just smelled it. And I was like, what's he up to?
Wait, you smelled beer on me?
Just now.
No. Is that for real?
Yeah, I smell a little beer.
Oh, gross.
Let's do yours, too. Gross. What do you got?
Okay. Are we going to go through our phones?
Why? I mean, I guess so. Isn't that the game?
Are we coming up with a new segment
let's
on
go,
the show?
Well, let's go. We don't have segments, but let's see who. Okay. I'll say one, then you say one.
Okay. Wait. Let me catch up.
I'm in A's.
Okay.
I got a Ryan Adams.
Wow. I got, you're going big.
Nothing in A's for you? I got a Pam Adlon and a Steve Agee.
I got Curtis Armstrong.
Who's that?
Man, Booger from Revenge of the Nerds.
Okay.
I do. I got his number.
I think I won that one.
No. Who did you have? Ryan Adams?
I had a Pam Adlon, Ryan Adams, and Steve Agee. That's a trifecta.
I have Steve Agee.
Oh, you have Steve Agee.
I have Steve Agee.
Do you have Steve Albini? You don't.
Nope. I have Arsh Barker.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I have a...
Let's keep going.
Dave Alvin.
No. Yeah. I'm done. Oh, I got Aziz. I got Scott Aukerman. Oh, I have Aubrey Plaza.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I got some good ones.
Oh, wait a minute. I got a Carlos Alzraki, and I've got a Jonathan Ames. I think I might...
Jonathan Ames is my neighbor.
Oh, yeah? You live up there?
Yeah.
What else?
He's a great guy. I got...
Leo
Allen. I got Leo.
That's pretty good.
I got Akiva.
But you know, Leo Allen actually lives in my old apartment. In Astoria.
Is that true?
Yes, it is.
No, he lives out here.
Oh, he moved?
Yeah, he lives out here.
I have Aziz, too.
Are you worried that people are going to listen to this and think we're dicks?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Do you have a Judd Apatow? I have Judd Apatow.
No.
I have Fiona Apple.
Whoa.
Fred Armisen.
Oh, shit.
Will Arnett.
Oh, I got Arnett.
Wait, hold on.
I got Arnett.
Tom Arnold.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
That's who I am.
Is it true that Tom Arnold has the tapes of Donald Trump saying racist things?
He says he does.
No, he doesn't.
I have Dave Attell. That's a good one.
I have the guy from...
I have Aukerman.
I have a guy named Brent from Mastodon. Do you know the band Mastodon? I have his phone number.
Hank Azaria. Cool guy. You got Hank Azaria?
Ooh, you got a good one.
I got a Bob Balaban.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing... I think you...
Maria Bamford.
I feel like you aggressively solicit these.
Lance Bangs. Elizabeth Banks. Sorry, Elizabeth Banks.
I think that's not a real one. You got some A-listers.
I think that's like a contact.
I got Toni Collette.
That's like an assistant.
I got Toni Collette.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Rob Corddry.
Uh-huh.
Terry Crews.
Ooh.
Whitney Cummings.
I got that.
These are great.
I
got Alexandra Daddario from Baywatch. Do you know her?
That's pretty good. Gorgeous. Roseanne Barr.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I got Dad.
Todd Barry. You got Dad?
I got your dad's phone number.
That's good.
I got Andy Daly.
Oh, that's good.
I'm jumping ahead
to
the D's.
Wow, how'd you get? I got Ed Begley.
I got Rob Delaney.
That's pretty good. I got a Delaney.
Ooh, dude, Patrick Dempsey.
Oh.
I got Patrick Dempsey's
number. I like that
number. Guy. Yeah.
I have two Lake Bells.
Yeah, me too. Well, I have one Lake Bell.
I don't know. Richard Belzer.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, wait, hold on.
I got
on.
Rachel Dratch.
Wait, hey, well, Annette Bening.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if we should, how much longer we should do this.
Are we starting to sound like dicks?
I think, we sounded like dicks when we said, hey, yeah, what famous people do you have in your phone? People are at work listening to this podcast going, fuck these guys.
Yeah. The weird thing is a lot of these are, I'm just looking at names and I might, Teddy Bergeron. Let's do like some of the ones that maybe people
don't
know. I
got Greg Fitzsimmons.
Oh, I have dead people in here.
Oh, who?
Shelley Berman.
Oh, don't call that number.
There's a lot I got to get rid of here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't ever do that.
I mean, either. And it's crazy. I've passed like two dead people.
Yep.
And, yeah.
John Krasinski I got.
Mike Chiklis. I don't have Krasinski.
I'll give it to you.
Thanks, man.
Lizzie Kaplan.
Dane Cook.
Tom Lennon. Dane Cook.
Yeah.
You know, the next step of this is let's call these people. One quick. Oh, you know what? I'm going to skip ahead. I have Will.i.am's phone number.
Oh, that's a good
one.
And
I'm going.
I'll
way
skip
down.
Ahead.
I have Alexander Payne's phone number. Let's call him.
Well, you were in the movie.
Okay, I win. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
You do.
End of game.
You do.
Yep, I did.
That's the end of this game. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh nope, David Wayne. I beat myself.
Hold on, I'll beat the both of them. Bob Saget.
Wow.
Yeah, Saget.
I don't know him. Nice guy.
Yeah, great guy.
I have Kristen Wiig's number. We could call her right now.
How about Tom Sharpling? Do you have Kristen Wiig's phone number?
Yeah.
Are you guys pals?
Do you want it?
No. Maybe after.
I love her. I can't say that we're pals. I think we're neighbors. I mean, we're pals, but, you know, I don't
Why
see
do you have
her
phone
often.
Number?
I did a table read for her.
I have her phone number, too, so never mind.
Man, this is not a competition.
It isn't? I thought that's why we
did
it.
Do you mind if I take this idea and I start my own podcast? called Contact List?
Yeah, do it. The thing is, I don't call or reach out to any of those people because I'm terrified.
Me too. I'm too intimidated.
Why
would I call them? I'm not going to call Alexander Payne.
All right, so wait, what's this new show? Let's get out of here.
The new show I did is called Do You Want to See a Dead Body?
Yeah.
And it's on YouTube Red. And
what's the premise?
Well, did you ever see the movie Stand By Me?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a bunch of kids. They go out in the woods and they know about a dead body.
The whole movie's getting to the dead body.
That's right.
Yeah.
Jerry O'Connell, shout out. And so I did a TV show based on that, but a comedy version of that, where I take different famous people out to find a dead body, a different dead body every week. And that's the setup of the show. It's scripted. It's not like a reality show or anything like that.
You're not fooling them into thinking you know where a real dead body is?
No, although Jeffrey Tambor wanted to do the show, and we couldn't work it out he wanted too much money. No, that's not true. He just schedule-wise. But he did ask me. I thought it was adorable. He said, can I ask how these people died? And I said, oh, Jeffrey, it's not actually a dead, but it's either actors pretending to be dead, or we get like one of those CSI decomposing fat guy that washed up on the beach, something like that. And he said, ah, now I get it. So
he wanted to prepare
how am I gonna behave when I see this person. So it's not really about You know, there's no we don't ever know how the person got killed. No one ever asked me how I know where all these bodies are.
Yeah.
It's just an absurd premise for hanging out with somebody, you know? So it's me and like, you know, we shot a bunch of these episodes. They're all like 15, 20 minutes, but, it's like Adam Scott, all the people I just read to you in my phone.
Sure. The funny crew.
The funny crew. Rob Corddry, Randall Park, John Cho, Terry Crews, Lil Rel, Judy Greer, Michaela Watkins.
I love her.
So it's all of our funny friends going out on a really dumb quest to find a different dead body with me.
How'd it come out?
It's my favorite thing like I've ever done.
Oh, good.
It's really so dumb and so funny because it's for YouTube Red, which is like their pay version. I think you pay like, I don't know, $10 or something. And they literally
for the year,
I think forever. And they were just, you know, it's one of those new platforms. Sure. So they're like, we want people like they're trying to get people that are not YouTube stars to do shows there. So, you know, they're like,
you mean people that people have heard of?
Yeah. So they're like, do whatever you want, say whatever you want. So, you know, it's the craziest show I've ever done. And it's just super funny. Like it has nothing to do with anything. There's no commentary on the real world or politics or anything. It's literally just me one-on-one with someone else. And we're both acting like idiots.
Oh, it's great.
And it's super fun. Yeah.
That's just pure funny.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I didn't see it.
Thank you. You think my name is Steve?
It's been great talking to you, Steve.
I enjoyed it.
Don't steal my giant marble.
I'm not going to. I am going to steal this knife.
No, you can't take
it. And this hammer.
No,
there's a lot of there's an unusual amount of weapons in here for a guy that for a guy that interviewed the president of the United States.
They took them all out.
They took out the hammer.
Yeah, and the knife.
And the knife.
Sure.
Did you play the guitar? I don't remember.
No.
You didn't say hey man.
Let's hang out.
Hey man, you want to hear me riff?
Yeah. Let's sing. I don't do that. Only with guitar players sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's the most famous person you ever played with? You can say anybody. Look in your phone.
I played with Jimmy Vaughn recently. That was exciting for me.
Wow.
The most famous person I ever
played. But are you going to go pro?
No.
Guitar-wise?
I don't think I can.
No. Too late?
I mean, I'd like to play with people, and I played with somebody recently, but I found it a little intimidating. I kind of pussed out.
Yeah. You ever play on stage with people?
Yeah, I have.
Like in sort of like a Live Aid
situation? Yeah, I played with Grant Lee Phillips, you know, and Mark Rivers. And
what, like Farm Aid?
Not a Farm Aid. No, it was a Greg Behrens used to do a Bring the Rock thing.
Yeah.
Where you tell a story and then play.
Yep.
I'll put together a great band. I played with Brendan Small.
Wow.
And that crew.
Oh, wow. Those guys are.
Yeah, but it's good to play with good
death
guys.
Plot.
Yeah. But he used to do a similar type of show.
Yeah. Does your girlfriend, does she enjoy it when you play or is she annoyed when you play?
She's fine with it. She doesn't like when I do it while we're watching television.
Right.
Even if it's electric with not plugged in.
But you don't like whip out your guitar and play for her and she's like.
Oh, no.
She's like, she gets like emotional.
No.
Yeah.
At the beginning you do that.
Yeah.
And then you put it.
And then once you like, once it's like.
Once you're like, I'm pretty good at this, right? She's like, yeah, you're pretty good.
Yeah. Right, stop playing.
That's done.
Please stop playing. Smoke on the water. Please stop playing Smoke on the Water.
Please stop playing your dumb blues noodling.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm glad everything worked out with your kid and that things are good for you. And it was, again, great talking to you, Steve.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
Okay, see, I told you that was fun. I never hung out with him. Now I feel like we should hang out more. But I don't know if that'll happen. Yes, I could play a little guitar. Clean, though. I'm going to play clean. All right? Clean.